Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the One Thing Podcast. I have Nick Sonnenberg on with us today. And Nick is an Entrepreneur Inc. columnist, guest lecturer at Columbia University, and the author of Come Up for Air, his new book about how teams can leverage systems and tools to stop drowning in their work, which I think we can all relate to. He is the founder and CEO of Leverage and a leading operational efficiency consultancy that helps companies implement his CPR business efficiency framework. Nick, thanks so much for being on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Oh man, I can't tell you. Nearly every team, organization, individual that I've ever worked with, that I've ever been around at some point has said to me, I have too much to do and not enough time. And I'm sure you've heard that before.
Yeah, I've also heard I'm drowning in work, which is why I titled my book, Come Up for Air. It's just like the most common thing you hear. It's like, how's it going? Oh, I'm drowning in work. You know, it's avoidable. And, you know, that's why I wrote the book and that's why I titled the book like that. But yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy how consistent that is.
So consistent. I think we can all relate to it. And we were talking about this a little bit before we started the podcast, but I found myself relating to this, and it comes in swells almost at times where you'll feel like things are a little bit more stabilized, in balance, so to speak, if that is such a thing. But then you'll have these swells of work, like you're launching a new book or you have a project that you're rolling out, or just things collide, wavelengths line up, and just everything's going at once. And for me, I've found that having a system or a model or some really efficient tools that you can use when things swell up, it becomes a necessity to not drown. And I'm sure you can relate to that too.
I think being efficient is good no matter what, whether you have a swell of work, whether you don't, whether you are in a recession, whether you're in an economic boom, whether you're remote, you're in person. There's never a situation where it wouldn't be better to be more efficient than less efficient. You know, and when I say efficiency, I mean just doing things right, removing the friction, the roadblocks, not going on a scavenger hunt, wasting time, looking for something for an hour that should have been two clicks away. You know, it's all the crap that doesn't give you joy or tap into your unique ability. You know, that's what I'm all about. How can I free up all the roadblocks and obstacles so that you can focus on things that you're uniquely best to work on, that's going to make a bigger impact for the business? And usually the stuff where it's like, you know, what did Chris say to me? Was that in a text, an email, a Slack message? Oh, I don't, you know, is that a file somewhere? Let me go. And you know, it no one likes it. In any position of any seniority level, no one likes that type of stuff. And so I think no matter whether you're in a swell or not, you just want to remove all that stuff. Even if you use that time just to, you know, think more deeply on your strategy or even take a little bit more vacation to reduce burnout, it's better than just wasting time going on a scavenger hunt. But yes, of course, if you have a swell of work, you absolutely, it's like not a nice to have, it's a need to have.
Yeah, and good call out too. You need it no matter what. And I think where I've seen, even for myself and others, is when you aren't in those times of super high demand, you'll fall out of practice with some of these, get a little lazy, maybe not maintain the habits you formed with leveraging tools and efficiency. And then when you have this swell, find yourself behind the curve trying to catch back up to that. And I'm sure you've seen that too.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, once people really understand deeply kind of the purpose of things and they see the benefit, it starts to really get ingrained as a new habit. You know, it's like we all learned how to use a laptop. Like you don't need to be told today, use your laptop instead of your typewriter, because you know it's, you know, whether you're very busy or not too busy, you know that the laptop is going to outperform and be more productive for you than the typewriter. So I think once people really understand the why and they see the impact, you know, it just sticks. And then, you know, but people fall into this quicksand. Like when you get busy, it's this quicksand problem where you're busy, you're totally drowning in work. And then in the moment, you're just like, I got to get this off my plate, you know, and I'll just send you a text or I'll send you an email or I'll just stick it somewhere in Slack. And it's like this hot potato game where it's just take it. And the thing is, when everyone is playing that game of hot potato, everyone's locally optimizing for themselves just to transfer stuff as quickly as possible, because you've got this, you know, flux of work and you don't know what to do. But the thing is, you have to be careful because when everyone's playing that game, everyone loses because what goes around comes around. And if I'm making something easier for me in the moment and I'm not putting it where it belongs, it's going to be 10 times harder for my colleague to find it. And then if my colleague is playing the same game back with me, it's going to be 10 times harder for me to find things. So the name of the game and the underlying principle of my book is set up systems and processes to optimize for retrieval of information, meaning people take pause and they're not just trying to play this game of hot potato and transfer stuff as fast as possible. Everyone takes pause, spends an extra few seconds to put things in the right drawer where it belongs. And if everyone adopts that, you turn the whole conversation and the whole strategy from a local optimization to a global optimization. And that's how you really win as a team. And it comes back to you as an individual, because if everyone's putting things in strategic places for you to find, it's going to save you 5 to 10 hours a week. I promise. That's what we see. And in your personal life, you already think like this. When you do your laundry, the fastest way to be done with your laundry is you take it out of the dryer and you throw it in one drawer. But you don't do that. You spend the extra minute to separate your socks in one drawer and your underwear in another drawer, not because it's the fastest way to be done with your laundry, but tomorrow when you need to put an outfit together, it's 10 times faster to do that because you've done the pre-work of organizing things into the right drawers. And in business, we have drawers. We have communications drawers. We've got drawers for our tasks and projects. We've got drawers for SOPs and processes. And if people were to just take pause and put things in the right drawer where it belongs, it'll be literally 10 or 100 times faster for you and your colleagues to retrieve what you're looking for and avoid that scavenger hunt, which is the stuff that really starts making you lose, you know, in a lot of cases, a full business day a week.
Yeah, I saw that you referenced that you know, there is potentially a full day to gain in efficiency. And that's a big number when you extrapolate it out across a year. I mean, you're talking about, you know, over a month and a half that you get back roughly in a year. And what could you do with that from a reinvestment of that time and the things that matter most for you? And you talked about like quicksand and drowning. I think it's such a good analogy or comparison for that feeling when you are snowed in and just completely overwhelmed, and what you see people do and they just start flailing and firing things off. Like you said, shooting it in text or email or random and not putting things where they belong and just snowballs downhill instead of creating that like reciprocal benefit for yourself and everyone of the efficiency that you mentioned.
It's tough because when you're drowning in work and you're already working a 12, 14, 15 hour day and you're just exhausted, you know, you really just got to figure out you're in survival mode. But if you're always in survival mode and you never spend the time to work on some things that are foundational, you're going to just never get out of it. It's another analogy I sometimes use is if you have a sink that's overflowing with water and you've got a hole in the pipe somewhere, if it takes you 5 minutes to mop the floor versus an hour to patch the pipe, a lot of people will just spend the 5 minutes to mop the floor, right? But if every week you got to spend 5 minutes mopping the floor, after 12 weeks, you've already spent an hour. But the difference is versus patching the pipe, you know, now look, patching the pipe, that you have to carve that time out. And maybe that'll take away from doing a sales call right now. But you fix the problem at the root cause. And now you don't have to worry about the 5 minutes wasting every week forever, you know? So at a certain point, you will hit a break even where that you'll get a return on time versus return on investment for fixing some of these things. And that return on time, it might be the 12-week mark, it might be the 2-week mark. It really depends, but people need to think about these things as, look, we need to actually take a step back and spend a little bit extra time on some of this foundational stuff because we know over the long run, it's going to give us back an hour a week, 2 hours a week, 3 hours a week, and it starts to stack up. And at a certain point, the fact that you don't have to do some of these low-level, inefficient activities because 6 months ago you made a fix that now you're reaping the benefits of, that's really something that people need to be thinking much more closely about.
It's a great point. And I love that you said return on time. It's such a mindset shift to think this way instead of, you know, what we say often, spend your time. Like, I got to go spend some time doing this or spend some time doing that, even though you're just vocalizing that. There is a mindset to it to shift and say, okay, my time is an investment. So how do invest it in the things that matter most?
That's a good point. I'll give that more thought. You don't ever say like, I spent some money buying Apple stock. You say, I invested my money buying Apple stock, right? And it's the same thing with time. You're not, some of these things where you're fixing foundational aspects of your team and your business, you're not spending the time to do it. You're investing the time to do it.
You got it. Yeah. And it is interesting when you reframe it that way and you think about your time as an ROI, or looking for an ROI, a return on investment for that time, instead of, you know, just like you said, mopping the floor. Like, how do I stop, reassess, like, how can I invest this time for a better long-term strategy?
Yep.
Something you mentioned too about root cause, I thought was something we should talk about some more. And we like to say, you know, think big and go small. Like, think big about your goals, go small to the small actions that you could do. And I've often related this going small to like a root cause analysis. Like, get as deep as you can to the root of the thing that will have the greatest impact for you. And, you know, try to get smaller if you can, or go deeper if you can when possible to the solution. But do you see a comparison with what you were saying there?
I mean, I do believe in first principles. I do believe in getting to the root of something, you know, like, because when you're not getting to the root of something, you're just patching. It's the equivalent of like just mopping the floor faster, you know? So it's, I don't know, say there's an issue with something in your business. It's so easy for someone just to say to you, look, we had this issue and, you know, we got it sorted out, like we're fine. It's another thing to just go a little bit deeper. No, well, how did you solve it? Are we sure that it's not going to happen again? Did you spend the extra five? Did you just fix this one episode? Or did you fix the process and now we're sure that that will never happen again for the next 100 episodes? And so I think that it's important to always kind of be thinking, are you patching or are you actually fixing a foundational layer to how you operate?
Yeah, great point. I think I saw that you referenced the 80-20 principle a little bit in some of your teaching. And I'd love to hear how you interpret that, especially when we're talking about like ROI and, you know, what work will yield the greatest impact for you.
Well, you know, it's so that for those that don't know the 80-20 principle, it's basically like 20% of your effort yields 80% of the results that you're trying to achieve. And that's kind of like my quick version of how that principle is meant. You know, I think that you can get carried away. It's a never-ending journey to be efficient. There's always something that you can do. You know, if I had nothing to do, like I literally could find ways to save a second or 2 seconds. And sometimes that adds up. You know, if you save in one process a second and then you have to execute that process 60 times a day, say it's how you manage email. You know, actually email, tangent for a second, but email is the most misused tool. It's the most popular thing that we train people on through Leverage, my consulting and training company. And so take email. Say you don't know about some tips or tricks that could save you even a second processing each email, but you get, you know, 120 emails a day. That's 2 minutes a day. That's 10 minutes a week, right? 5 day work week. That's 40 minutes a month. You know, like it starts to add up. It's like 8 hours a year, you know, just showing you a 1 second time savings. And then, you know, you're a team of 10, that's 80 man hours or so. So, you know, this stuff really does start to add up quite quickly. And a second really can make a difference. And so, but you have to apply the 80-20 thinking to a lot of these things. You can't fix everything. Everything's a balance. How much energy, attention, and money investment do you want to invest in short-term activities versus long-term activities? Most companies go 100% short-term and 0% long-term, at least the ones I see quite often, or at least smaller companies. And it makes sense. If you're struggling to make payroll or you haven't hit product market fit, you know, nothing matters more than making payroll. So you got to just put all efforts into growing, say, revenue, and you don't have the luxury of patching. You know, patching the pipe is a luxury. You know, most people don't have the luxury. They just got to mop because they're in survival mode. Getting out of survival mode is a luxury. And so you have to look at it like that. You know, fixing a process that tomorrow won't generate a dollar, but it'll save you time in the long run is a luxury that, you know, very few people can afford, or actually they can't afford it because you don't need to do, you don't need to optimize everything. You can apply the 80-20 principle and just take 20% of processes or 20% of how you do things and just try to tighten that up. You don't need to get crazy and be trying to optimize thousands of processes. There might be three processes that you start with that are run day in and day out that are critical, that only one person on your team knows how to do it. So you're sitting on risk that if that person leaves, you're screwed because no one else knows how to do it. So you don't need to do everything at once. You know, start with just a few things that will give you the highest leverage, no pun intended, and move from, you know, I can guarantee you that there's more than enough work to do that can save you an immense amount of time. You don't need to be thinking like you need to do a million things. Pick the top couple of things, focus on that, start saving time with those things. And usually when we work with clients, you just need to create that little bit of breathing room. And so if you're out of capacity, if you're totally drowning in work, you just need to give them an extra hour or two. And now when they have a little bit of breathing room, now it's like, let's use that breathing room and let's fix the next thing. And let's make that 2 hours, 2.5 hours. And now with 2.5 hours, we got a little bit more time. Now we can patch the pipe a little bit better. Now let's move that to three. And so, and before you know it, you know, we can work our way up to a full day back, but you, it's like this snowball effect. You have to keep reinvesting back the time that you're saving into the next foundational layer. And eventually you will find that you're getting back a full business day. Now, what you do with that time is on you. Maybe you still work the same number of hours. It's just you're repurposing time that was purely wasted going on the scavenger hunt. And now you're able to do more key projects that will add to the bottom line of your team that help you as an individual get promoted or achieve what you're looking to achieve. Maybe you can do a blend and get more work done and have a more relaxing vacation and not be bombarded with emails and texts while you're trying to take a family trip. So whatever you do with that freed up time, that's on you. But I would rather literally someone just take a vacation and do no work than waste time going on a scavenger hunt, because at least the time that they're away is rejuvenating. When they come back, they're not burnt out. We'll have a higher retention, better culture, and better quality of work.
If you own a small to medium-sized business that kept its employees on payroll through COVID, you may have a big cash refund waiting for you. The Employee Retention Credit is a tax credit of up to $26,000 per employee. And now, more businesses than ever qualify. The experts at RefundsPro.com specialize in cutting through the red tape of qualifying for this government program. Most of their refunds are over $100,000. Even businesses that have received PPP funds may be eligible. And there are absolutely no fees unless you receive a refund, so there's no reason not to apply. If your business experienced shutdowns, limited capacity, supply chain challenges, or reduced revenue due to COVID, you likely qualify. RefundsPro.com has already helped hundreds of businesses, so don't lose the refund you're owed by missing the deadline. Get started today with a free 5-minute questionnaire at RefundsPro.com. That's refunds with an S, pro.com.
Yeah, there's so much in there. And when you think about, I think the longer term play and how you create margin. I know I've had the experience of coaching some teams, and you know, their goal was to reduce the number of hours that they're working. They're like, geez, we are back to back all day, you know, from 7 a.m. until 6 p.m. every day, or you know, move that around the thresholds on either end, but just really long days. And as they made progress, they didn't find that they were reducing the number of hours, at least in like the first phase of that. What they were doing is making progress on the things that were most important. Then as they rolled into like a phase two of that, they started to see those vacations start to free up and more. But you have to get, it's like the drowning analogy again, you got to get your nose above water first so you could breathe and get clear. And then you can start to work your way to be, you know, head above water, shoulders above water, and see progress. Yes. And yeah, and you said something earlier, and I had someone share an analogy with me a while ago, and I thought it was really interesting. And they were talking about like, hey, I can't like pick my head up and look over to the horizon, like have a longer vision to your point, like a company that's just trying to pay, get payroll covered and just get some revenue through and pay the bills, keep their team around, because that's more important. And what they were saying is like, I can't pick my head up and look over the horizon because I got potholes in front of me. I got to swerve. If I don't, I'm going to run over these potholes and things are going to blow. I'm going to blow a tire. And what came to my mind at the time was like, well, the beauty of like picking your head up, at least getting clear on what north is you'll know which direction to swerve, left or right, to miss the pothole. So like both those things are really important. You need to be able to pick your head up and then look back down.
I think it's the difference between efficiency and effectiveness. Efficiency is doing things right, and effectiveness is doing the right things. And they go hand in hand. You need to be doing both. You don't want to be moving fast and removing the scavenger hunt and removing the roadblocks, and then you're moving in the wrong direction. So you need to know the direction you're moving in, and you don't want to waste time getting there.
Great point. Yeah, good point. When you're working with teams or you're working with organizations, and you're, you know, seeing some of this, where if they're coming to you and they're saying, "Hey, we are snowed in, we are really in critical condition here," like, where do you generally start with them first?
It depends. It matters. You know, sometimes we work with mega companies that are in the Fortune 10 with huge teams. Sometimes people are tech savvy, some aren't tech savvy. So it really depends. But there's like kind of two things that most companies have gross inefficiency in that are quick wins. The number one thing, I mentioned this before, that we do at Leverage, you know, we do consulting and training, and that could be Slack, Microsoft Teams, Outlook, Gmail, Asana, kind of all the core technology tools that teams need to be high-performing teams to collaborate properly. Email is usually a really logical start. If you can get to inbox zero and get a grip on your email, one, I can guarantee, a lot of people thinking right now, oh, that's impossible. I have 250,000 emails in my inbox. It doesn't matter. Like, we've gotten people with hundreds of thousands. Even just reading my book will help put a dent in it. But there's missed opportunities sitting in email right now that people just are missing because they don't have a good system. And it's causing unnecessary stress and a lot of wasted time because it's just not managed properly. So we teach how to use search, not needing as many folders, how to snooze emails so they can disappear, magically reappear at the perfect time. The difference between the inbox and the archive, should you archive or delete? Like, there's little nuances that are important. And the email, it's such a commonly used tool. Like, you might never have heard of Asana or Slack, or maybe you're just starting to roll it out and some teams maybe use it and some don't. And we could talk about that and when you should use them. But every single person uses Gmail and Outlook, basically. It's like that has penetrated and that is here to stay. And so knowing how to use those tools efficiently can save a tremendous amount of time because of the volume that things are happening in those tools. And also the benefit is, you can learn at your own pace and you're not negatively impacted if your colleague doesn't get to inbox zero. Like, you get full benefit even if your colleagues don't, versus other collaboration tools which are critical. And we talk about this in the book. You need everyone to kind of start and adopt it at the same time. Otherwise, you kind of get punished if you're trying to use, you know, a new tool, but it requires, you know, collaboration and your team to be looking there. And if they're refusing to look and they still want to use text or email, you kind of get punished following best practice and using the right tool. But email, you know, people can learn at different paces and adopt it at different paces. And the people that adopt it reap the benefit regardless.
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably a good to mention in your book and in your teachings, you leverage a framework you call CPR, right? Communication, planning, and resources, which is, I love the simplicity of. And it's beautiful.
And it's on brand, right? Come up for air.
I know.
Stop drowning at work, CPR.
Right on the nose. And communication being like email, enterprise messaging, like your message, like you're talking about with Slack or Asana or Microsoft Teams. And that there is like a, and I've seen this, there's like a delicate dance to do between email and enterprise messaging like Slack as the alternative. And I'd love to hear a little bit more from you on how you see that balance, you know, relative to, I guess, the team and the specific organization, but like, you know, what's appropriate? Cause I've seen it tip to where everything's in Slack and you can't find anything and files are hard. Like you don't know which, you know, group message it was in. If it's not in a channel, you can't relocate it. And then the other end of that with email, where it's everything's in email, you've got an inbox of 1,000 to your point. Like there's so much going in there. It could have just been an FYI in Slack, for example. So I'll pause there.
Yeah. What I talk about in the book is, you know, CP&R, communication tools, planning tools, resource tools, those are those drawers that we talked about before. Just like you have a sock drawer and an underwear drawer, you have drawers for those three buckets. And, you know, within each of these buckets, like take communication, you've got internal communication, you've got external communication. There's different tools to help you with both of those buckets. So in general, email should be external communication. And in general, Slack or Microsoft Teams should be internal. And there's reasons I lay out in the book. Probably the primary one is, you know, email, if you think about it, the logic is it's ordered chronologically versus in tools like Slack and Teams, it's ordered and grouped by topic. You have these channels. And so there's functionality to make them both more robust for the different purposes that they were ultimately built for. But even if you don't use the tools 100% perfectly, at least just knowing, hey, at my company, we've adopted kind of the framework laid out in Come Up for Air. So we know that internal communication, we're going to be using Slack, external, we're going to be using email. So, you know, if tomorrow you're trying to look up something that, you know, a colleague said to you, at least you know what tool to open with the highest probability of finding that piece of information versus right now. Of course you want to use it right. Of course you want to be thinking about all the nuances of using that tool right. When should you use channels? When should you have a private one versus a public? Automation, like all these different things are important, but it starts with even just knowing, hey, what's the most logical drawer for me to open? Now you want to organize the drawers if you open it, but at least you want to know, are you opening a sock drawer or are you opening an underwear drawer? Right now in business, it's like, there's no logic. It's just things can be anywhere. And you got to solve that first. And then the next step is, are you using the tool properly?
Yeah, good point. Internal versus external. And I think that's a really good default and a simple way to think about how to leverage those two things. That makes a lot of sense. So communication's huge, right? And that's where you go to first and you can score the early wins and really optimize. And then I guess the P, can we talk about in CPR, the planning? And I'm assuming that's, you know, goals and strategy, those things.
It's that, but it's also like just tasks and projects. A lot of people delegate things that are actionable that you want to hold someone accountable to, and they're doing that in communication tools, right? Like you wouldn't want to like start doing your annual planning over text message and it's like, okay, you agreed that you're going to sell $10 million worth of, you know, services. And, you know, if that's in a text message and it's a year, you know, now we're a year in the future and we're trying to talk about how did it go this year. You know, you don't want to be scrolling back 10,000 messages to say, oh, okay, yeah, we said that the goal was, you know, $10 million. Likewise, whether it's a goal or it's as granular as like, hey, Chris, can you edit this podcast by Friday? Those are still what we put into the planning bucket. It's still things that you want to hold people accountable to, whether that accountability is in the form of achieving a project, completing a task, achieving a goal. You want to hold them accountable. And communication tools, things can slip through the cracks. Communication is to communicate. It's an announcement. Hey, welcome Nick to the team. I don't need to hold anyone accountable to that. Hey, Chris, can you get this done by Friday? I want to hold someone accountable to that. I want to be able to click a button and know, what are all the things that I delegated this week? Did they get done? What's the status of our goals? What's the status of these key projects? I shouldn't have to ask people. I shouldn't have to chase people on the scavenger hunt. These things should be one or two clicks away. Yet in business, we're wasting so much time by people putting those things in the wrong type of tool to begin with. Most of the time, people are putting actionable things that you need to hold people accountable to inside of text, email, or Slack or Teams, which are all communication tools, and they belong in a planning tool like Asana or Monday or one of those tools. And tools are built for specific purposes, right? In Asana, I can click a button and know what I need to do today. I can click another button and know what's going on with all the key clients. I can click another button and know what did I delegate that's past due. I can click another button and know how are we doing on the book launch. I can't do that in these other tools. And it's like the equivalent of if we were to go take your team. Say you want to take them camping in the forest together. You need a walkie-talkie to communicate, but you also need a map to navigate out of the forest. Most people have no distinction or strategy between the walkie-talkies in their team and the maps in their team.
I like that analogy. When running a business, let's face it, your employees can create all kinds of interesting challenges and situations, like getting complaints from customers or other team members. That's why we recommend you consider talking to Bambi. Somebody isn't showing up to work when they're supposed to, can talk to Bambi. An employee reports an issue like sexual harassment, maybe you're not sure you have a document policy to back you up. You should talk to Bambi. And with Bambi, you get access to your own dedicated HR manager starting at just $99 per month. They're available by phone, email, and real-time chat, so onboarding and terminations run smoothly, team members reach peak performance, and your business stays compliant with all of the changing HR regulations. And with Bambi's HR autopilot, you'll automate important HR practices like setting policies, training, and feedback. Hiring HR managers can easily cost $80,000 a year, but Bambi starts at just $99 per month. And if you're a small to medium-sized business, this might be the best option for you. Go to Bambi.com right now and type in the one thing under podcast when you sign up. That's spelled Bambee.com. Bambi.com, type in the one thing.
See, we definitely need a format for like capturing our commitments, goals, deliverables on projects, like progress and tracking on you know, how we on or off track to those things. And I've seen varying levels of complexity with that. And I'm curious to hear your insight. Like, for example, like a spreadsheet, if you're an entrepreneur and there's a low level of complexity, or at least you're getting started, like perhaps that's a good place to start. On the other end of that spectrum, you have things like you'd say like Asana or Monday, where you've got multiple projects that have multiple stakeholders and multiple deliverables with each. And if you don't have that level of complexity, things are going to fall through the cracks, right? And so it's kind of knowing what your needs are and then finding the resources that support that.
Yeah, I think it's all a balance. Like, you have to be strategic with how you roll these things out. That's, you know, I would say Asana versus a spreadsheet, at least if you work with us, it's pretty quick to get people using Asana correctly. So I don't see any reason why anyone would ever want to use a spreadsheet over Asana, because like literally, you know, in a matter of days, like you can be using Asana pretty well and, you know, be like 10 times better than a spreadsheet. I think an argument though could be documenting a process really well in a tool like ProcessTree versus putting it into like a Google Doc, you know? Mm. And like, that's like a bigger discrepancy in time investment. And so some of those things, you really just have to be strategic and decide, you know, how many you want to do, what are the most key processes, and you've kind of got to plan it out and allocate time in your sprint, whether you do weekly or monthly or whatever you do. But, you know, there's different things take different amounts of time to roll out and have different opportunity costs. And so something like spreadsheet versus Asana, the opportunity cost is massive, and the change in time investment to get Asana, which would be far superior than spreadsheet, it's marginal. So like, yeah, you have to just be balancing the risk and the reward, or the cost to the reward. And something like a spreadsheet to Asana, I don't see any reason why someone would want to do that, unless, you know, there could be nuances where your company hasn't yet approved it, or like they're starting to consider it and like half of your team doesn't want to, so you can't use. But even in that case, you still get so much benefit just using a tool like that for yourself. Even if your team doesn't use it, it's still helpful to be able to click a button and know what you need to work on today and, you know, take the benefits of just the solo case.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a great point. I'm trying to think of a time where maybe there's a balance, and I could think when you're like a scratch pad, or like when you're initially forming your plan and the like call them priorities or strategies that you would implement to say, so you have a goal, you're like, all right, these five things are going to get me to my goal. Here's the strategies for each. When you're kind of going through that phase of it,
sure.
I've seen using like, you know, a spreadsheet or something that really helps sure. like the beauty of the simplicity. But then you're like, okay, this one right. strategy is a very complex project that needs to go live in Asana.
So yeah, like I'll plan out my goals sometimes in a spreadsheet. I'll do mind mapping and brainstorming and Miro and digital whiteboarding tools or Google Docs. But once we've kind of aligned on actionable work that needs to get done or goals that, you know, we've committed to, that's where it should then, you know, that's where we will go and put it into kind of like the main system.
Yeah. Good point. That's good. And sometimes like there is beauty in the simplicity when you're just trying to narrow your focus, but that simplicity is insufficient when it comes to very, very big or even medium and small size projects, programs, products, et cetera. Okay,
yeah, totally.
So that the planning. So communication's a big challenge and seems to yep. be the place where most organizations can see benefit the fastest, and it's sustained over time. Planning, and if we've talked about, and not only the process, but like some of the tools you can use. And I think we've touched on resources a little bit, but in the R and CPR, can we dig in a little bit on the resource component?
Yeah. So like resource is all about documenting your knowledge. So every company has intellectual property, whether you realize it or not. Even as simple as how you do payroll, you know, that's unique to your business. You know, you log into this tool, you click this button, you double check this. You want these things to be documented, and you probably have thousands of processes and SOPs, standard operating procedures. You don't need to feel like you need to document everything all tomorrow. You could apply that 80-20 principle, but you need to start thinking about this stuff. Not only will it save you time, right? You don't want, if you have to repeat yourself more than once to someone to answer a question, that should be a trigger. Hey, maybe I need to put this in our knowledge base. And then people can go and find that. Back to the mopping the floor and patching the hole. Mopping the floor would be answering the question once a week forever. Patching the pipe would be, I'm going to go and create a little article or a snippet. I'm going to put it in the knowledge base in a logical place. And now for the rest of time, people can go there and answer that question themselves. I never have to waste time for the rest of my career answering that question, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, creating the document and putting it in the knowledge base might take you an extra few minutes. But that's an investment that will pay off. And so you need to be thinking about this, and it not only will it save you time, but it'll reduce the risk. You don't want risk that someone leaves and they're the only person that knows how to do a sales call or do payroll, right? You want to, if you've invested the money for an employee to do work, you want to capture all of that knowledge and not have risk that it leaves the moment that they leave, right? And so just like, you know, we're talking about investing time versus spending time, and how, you know, you would invest in Apple stock just like you're investing time to generate a return. You also could make an investment in something like disability insurance or an insurance policy that, you know, maybe you hope to never see a return, but you know that you're giving money every month for your disability insurance because if one day, God forbid, something happens, you know you're protected. And it's the same thing with documenting your knowledge. Not only are you saving time, so you are getting kind of that return on investment, you also are kind of buying an insurance policy at the same time. And so it's important that people just are aware of the benefits, whether they're invisible or visible, to the activities that are critical to your business.
Well said. And we see so much when it comes to the business goals, objectives, call it professional goals, there's so much of, there's so many tools and resources and your framework, and there's a lot of thought and rigor that goes into how we distribute this across teams and find efficiencies in communication. And then you flip the coin over and you look at your personal goals, and then there's just like an ocean between those things. And I'm curious if you see from your end any application, you know, on the same framework when you're thinking about setting goals for yourself personally. Not that those things are always disconnected, because we find that they're generally very connected, but there is a disparity when you think about, hey, I'd love to do this thing for myself personally, and how we apply this the same methodology.
I think in terms of just thinking, right, I would say whether you're doing something for business or personal, you should always be thinking, what's the value of your time? Do you enjoy what you're doing? Can you kind of buy back time at a discount? Like, if your time is worth $100 an hour, you know, could you pay someone $20 an hour to do that for you? You know, so I think that there's a lot of similar thinking involved. The same, you know, with setting personal goals and business goals, you know, however you go about thinking about how you set goals probably should be relatively consistent, you know? How I use email is exactly the same for my personal and my business life. I use Asana for both business and personal life. I'm always thinking about, you know, is this going to generate a return on time or a return on investment? And so I think that, you know, the lines have been blurred between work and personal life, and it's really about work-life integration versus balance. And I think that a lot of the thinking carries over on both sides of the court.
Yeah, agreed. And it's we have the opportunity, because we in our coaching, we really like to earn the right to look at people's personal and professional goals, professional first in many cases, and then earn the right to the personal. And it comes up all the time that you see a high level of thought and complexity, necessary complexity on the professional side. And then you have these very kind of like vague or like not very well baked out goals on the personal side. And I just continue to stress how important it is to, like you said, like integrate those things, both from a tools and thought process and rigor, but, you know, I think just the investment and the time and the importance of that.
100%.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Nick, what else do you think would be good from your book to touch on that we haven't already, that would help someone understand what you guys are focused on?
You know, we talk a bit in the book also, not just saving time, but optimizing time, and how, you know, different time slots on the day aren't all worth the same. And 9 a.m. on a Monday after a relaxing weekend, and you woke up and you worked out and you had your coffee or your kombucha or whatever you do, you know, your brain might be at full horsepower by 9 a.m. on a Monday versus 7 o'clock on a Friday after 100 Zoom calls for the week, and you're exhausted and you don't have your laptop. And so you need to be thinking about, how do you optimize your time? Like, how can you shift things that don't require your brain to be, you know, at full horsepower? How can you reduce a meeting by 15 minutes and tell someone to send you a video? And now you just got back really valuable time, and now you can watch that video in the back of that Uber during low value time. And so there's some things like that that don't require any technology that people could just be more aware of. And, you know, if you want to go deeper, yeah, we wrote a whole book about this, so people can pick up the book and see a bunch of other strategies.
Well, that's a good segue. Like, where, if the listeners want to come check out more, find you, read your book, like, where can they hunt you down to stalk you and be part of your world?
Well, thank you for asking that. So you can go to comeupforair.com. That's where you can find out where to buy the book, but also we put together a ton of additional resources in addition to the book. The book is 320 pages long. It's packed with strategies and tactics. There's no fluff. HarperCollins didn't want it to be any more than 320 pages long. And, you know, we're efficiency geeks, so it would have been like 1,400 pages long if we weren't. And so we have a whole bunch of additional calculators, checklists, advanced material that didn't make into the book, that in the book will say, you know, if you want to go deeper, go and use this resource. And all the resources are on Come Up for Air. So that's everything book related. And if you're a team that wants additional help, my company Leverage, which is at getleverage.com, we do operational efficiency consulting and training for organizations and teams.
Awesome, man. I appreciate it. Nick, if you could have the listeners just take away one thing from the podcast today, what would that be?
They need to go to comeupfair.com and no. I would say that, you know, they need to be thinking about how they spend time as an investment versus a cost. And they need to be thinking about, you know, utilizing all these tools in the right way to maximize team performance and optimizing, you know, for retrieval of information versus just playing that game of hot potato.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for doing this today, Nick. And I hope it was a good experience for you. I know we talked a lot about a lot of really valuable things for the listeners. So I appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the One Thing Podcast. If you're a bold risk taker who wants to dream big and achieve a higher level of success in your life or business, visit theonething.com. There you'll find information on one-on-one coaching, our exclusive community membership program, and customized workshops that will help you get your team or organization aligned and rowing in the same direction. That's the1.com to start living the life you've always dreamed of today. Be sure to follow the show to stay up to date on weekly episodes, guest interviews, and more. Plus, we would love to hear from you. Send us a voice note by going to speakpipe.com/theonething or email us at podcast@theonething.com. We'll see you next week.